Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The top story this week was the killing of Christopher Stevens, the U.S. ambassador to Libya. He was killed by a small group of heavily armed protesters, and that is what we know for sure. But who were these men, and why did this happen? Most of the coverage was based on speculation, focusing on the Muslim film that has sparked major protests around the globe. So why did this happen? The coverage has become the top story also on the presidential campaign. The question that novelist Hisham Mattar asks in The New Yorker is this: what was really behind the Benghazi attack? Was it really a religious outrage that made a few young men lose their heads and commit murder? The answer in most media outlets is a resounding yes. Well, joining us to talk about how the media should be covering this is Borzu Daragahi. He's a Middle East correspondent for the Financial Times, and he joins us on the line from Turkey. Hi, Borzu. Welcome to the show. And we are also joined by Craig Unger. Craig is out with a new book called Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. Craig is the former deputy editor of the New York Observer and editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine. He is the author of the New York Times best-selling House of Bush, House of Saud. In his new book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power, he asks a very important question, and that is how, after leaving the Bush administration in disgrace, did Karl Rove rise again, and what does it mean that he is now back in power? Hi, Craig. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Well, as we always do on Friday, we start off on a positive note and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So, Craig, why don't we start off with you? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, I think there's an interesting piece in The Guardian today by Max Blumenthal, and it's about what triggered all the episodes, what appears to have triggered the episodes in the Middle East. That is this very amateurish film that appears to have come from a group of right-wing extremists. It looks like it's a group of Christian evangelicals and Copts, that is Egyptian Christians. And it was attributed to a man named Sam Basili, or Basil, I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce it. That appears to have been a pseudonym, but this is the trailer of the film, which is available on the Internet. It's a very amateurish, almost unwatchable production. It's very anti-Islamic, and this is one of the factors that may have triggered the events going on in the Middle East right now.
And can you talk a little bit about what you learned about the names behind this film and talk about why that's important to point out?
Well, it is very convoluted, but what you see ultimately is that this was a fairly deliberate attempt to trigger an episode, and of course it's coming right in the midst of the election season here in the United States. And what interests me the most is the response. That is, you see that Mitt Romney immediately seemed to have jumped the gun and started attacking the Obama administration for being soft in the Middle East. And here now we have a series of events, and there's no telling what's going to happen. But this could easily erupt into the kind of issue that will dominate the remainder of the presidential election.
And Borzu, are you with us?
Chip in there. Hello.
Hi, Borzu.
Hello?
Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
hi,
great.
How are you?
Hi, good. Thank you for joining us. So, Borzu, we're talking now, giving kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week, and Craig was just pointing out a piece about the film, Innocence of Muslims, and who's behind it. And what did you see this week that you thought was done well?
I thought there was an article in The Economist that I thought was very interesting about how, even though there are these things that are happening that seem to be tarnishing the reputation of the Arab Spring revolutions that erupted last year. Very broadly speaking, this rather lengthy article, at least for The Economist, argued, there are many successes that we have to look at in terms of where the Arab Spring is headed. You know, in Libya, in Tunisia, and Egypt, there have been, you know, great strides in terms of moving towards democratization and transparency and rule of law, even though these, you know, rather ugly road bumps and these events are happening.
And so what did the article conclude with? Where do you think, or where did this reporter say the Arab Spring will be going?
I don't think they were very conclusive about where it will be going, but that there was, you know, hopeful signs. For example, in Libya, you know, while all of this was happening, while all of these protests were happening, Libya managed to appoint a prime minister. The sort of new parliament that was elected managed to agree on a prime minister that will help run the government and help restore order. And that is where the article was headed, that, you know, these are some positive signs about where these countries are headed.
And you've been reporting from Libya extensively. What was your reaction when you heard about the armed attack of the U.S. embassy?
Not just in Libya, but in Egypt and Tunisia as well. What you see happening are, you know, small groups of extremist Muslims, very well organized usually, calling themselves Salafists, companions of the Prophet. And they are, you know, in Libya and in Tunisia as well, they didn't do very well in elections. And they're using this ridiculous movie as a way of gathering up the masses and enraging the masses to pursue a local political agenda, that is to intimidate their political rivals, to impose a sort of version of Islam on them. And that's how I saw this. I saw this as part of the same kind of dynamic that you've seen in Libya, Tunisia, and Egypt, where the Salafists, these extremist Muslims, are burning down shrines that they don't belong to a sect of Islam that they don't agree with. They're harassing women. They're attacking civil society groups. These are the people, these are the threat, and these are the people who are behind this unrest that's taking place now. These are not spontaneous outbursts by ordinary people. These are very well organized, led often by sheikhs or clerics in Saudi Arabia who are calling for these sorts of protests.
What are your thoughts on the media narrative that we're hearing on this? Because a lot of outlets are making it sound like it's angry men who are responding to the film and taking to the streets, and that's...
Well, no one's even seen the film yet. There's just a trailer out there, and many people haven't even seen the trailer. These are parts of political... These are political organizations that are pursuing domestic political agendas.
Huh.
And if you look at even like a place like Iran, which is supposedly totally anti-American, they could only muster like 200 Basiji militiamen to show up in front of the Swiss embassy. And in Egypt today, colleagues were at the demonstration. It was rather small, you know, despite it being rather violent and a lot of rock throwing. It was rather small. So the vast majority of the people, while upset about the film or the idea of the film, rather, because many haven't seen it, are not participating in these protests. This is an attempt to Islamify these societies by creating a crisis.
You know, it's interesting to hear you say this, because most radio stories that I've heard lead with the noise and the people yelling, and they're making it sound like it's thousands and thousands of people at these protests.
I'm in Istanbul now. I'm in, you know, Turkey, which is a vast Muslim country of 80 million people. No one cares, you know. There is 200 people protesting against this movie. So, you know, you would think if there was a lot of outrage, you know, this country, which is, supposedly becoming more pious, they would be out there in the streets protesting. Instead, they're out partying right now. It's Friday night.
Craig, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, have you been following this? And based on what you're hearing from Borzoo, how much does that compare with the coverage that you've been hearing in the U.S. outlets?
Well, you know, I defer to Borzoo on what's really happening in the Middle East. I mean, what's interesting to me is what's happening on the domestic front and how this will impact the U.S. election. And you see Romney jumping the gun. You see he's got a huge coterie of neoconservative advisors. There's also a new group that attached, well, it's technically not part of the Romney campaign, but they've been, it's called Special Operations, OPSEC, for Operation Security, and they're painting Obama as very weak in the Middle East. And I guess my interest is the extent to which this may become a narrative in the presidential election.
What are your thoughts on that, Borzoo?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, that's one of the Republican Party's strategies. I'm not an expert on the U.S. political scene, but I am an American, and I've been following the elections very closely. I don't think it's going to work, though. I think that, you know, most people around the U.S. are generally sympathetic to the aims of the Arab Spring uprisings. While they are upset, again, at seeing people burn American flags and chant anti-American slogans, I think they've grown numb to it, and I think that ultimately the election will not be... I mean, I'm not an expert on elections, but I think that the Obama campaign and the Democrats have very wisely managed to change this election into a contest about who Mitt Romney actually is, as opposed to what Obama has actually done.
And that is Borzu Dargahi. He's Middle East correspondent for the Financial Times, joining us from Turkey. And we're talking about what is happening in Libya and in many other countries with the protests, where it sounds in the media like there are thousands and thousands of people there. But as Borzu is reporting, there are hundreds of people. And these protests are about so much more than this film. And Borzu will be with us for a couple more minutes. So if you have any questions or comments for him, you can drop us you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Craig Unger. He's out with a new book, which we'll talk about in about 5 or 10 minutes, called Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. And we have a call for you, Borzo. Let's hear from Eid in Berkeley. Hi, Eid.
Hi, good morning. You know, I've been waiting for October surprise. This thing is against Obama. It really has nothing to do with anything. There is no movie. It's only 14 minutes of terror. It is made up. In fact, some of the actors, or particular actress, she was very angry. The dubbed sound over the video track, it is a bunch of really garbage, nothing whatsoever. The extremists, the Salafists, but supposedly their head in Egypt was found in a car with a naked woman. His defense was that she was his niece. They were having sex. They are a bunch of little, you know, bunch of really low class, and they will take advantage, and the Egyptians won't have anything to do it. Egypt is a secular state. These are very small minority, but the whole aim of the whole thing is the beginning of an October surprise to get to topple Obama over, and people should rise to that, even though I disagree. And I was very disappointed when he said that Egypt is not an ally. Egypt is very good ally to the United States. Without Egypt, the whole Middle East would be in a big mess. This is what I have to say, because I know you're short of time, but this is domestic. It's again, it's the thing. And I do like to have this guy put in prison, whoever made that movie. Not that I'm against freedom of speech, but it was intentional. This was intentional to have this little brains using religion.
Well, thanks for calling, Eid. We've got one more call on this, and then we'll get comments. Do we have Lewis on the line? Oh, we had a caller, Lewis, who wanted to know if any legal or criminal charges can be brought. Borzu, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that possibly this gentleman, apparently, I'm not sure, I'm just reading reports here, but apparently the guy was such a loser that he was barred from using the internet, the guy who was directing this movie. I mean, who gets barred from using the internet? So I don't know, maybe he can be charged with that crime. But, you know, on the question of is this some kind of conspiracy, I really doubt it. There's no evidence to suggest that. I think that the movie came out some time ago. It was just a sort of coincidence that it came to the attention of the Muslim population over the last week or so. And I'm not sure at this point if it's going to, we'll see how it plays out. But so far it doesn't seem like it's hurt Obama. It seems like Obama is handling this in a very smart way, and as a matter of fact, it shows Obama in crisis mode, doing what he does best, staying cool, not overreacting, dealing with a national security issue in a sensitive way that doesn't seem demagogic, doesn't blunder us into another war or conflict, doesn't, you know, ruin relations with other countries, dealing with it in a subtle way. This is why Americans were fed up with George Bush in 2008. This is why they elected Obama, and he's doing this very well, and he still scores very high on national security issues. I doubt that Romney can make hay out of this.
All right. Well, I know we have to let you go, so thank you so much for staying up late and joining us, Borzu. That is Borzu Dargahi. He is Middle East correspondent for the Financial Times. He's joining us from Turkey. And you can go to yourcallradio.org to read his reporting and more information about these protests. Again, Borzu is reporting that a couple hundred people are showing up, not thousands, and it's about so much more than this film. And so you can read more about that at yourcallradio.org. And staying with us on the line is Craig Unger. He is former deputy editor of the New York Observer and editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine. We've had Craig on in the past talking about his best-selling books, including House of Bush, House of Saud, and he's out with a new book that I have to say, Craig, reads kind of like a spy novel, kind of like a thriller, and it's called Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. And E called to say that there's a lot more behind this, that there was possibly something set up to really go after President Obama. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that, because there has been a lot of coverage of this in terms of Romney's response. Governor Romney has actually been getting now a lot of criticism for blaming the administration for apologizing for the film, when in fact it was not the White House that released a statement condemning the film, but the embassy in Cairo before the protest began. And now Romney is being criticized by some Republicans for speaking out too soon. So when these kinds of stories come out, I mean, you've got a lot of people wondering, you know, what is going on behind the scenes? Who's really calling the shots here? What role does the media play?
Well, it plays a very important role. I mean, I hate to speculate when I don't know the answers to questions.
Right.
But I think you can see that, the Guardian report I mentioned earlier makes it pretty clear that the film was intentionally provocative. For example, the actors were kind of tricked into doing it. None of them ever uttered the word Muhammad. The word Muhammad was added in post-production. So there appears to be a certain amount of deceit here. Again, we don't know what the actual film, to my knowledge, no one has actually seen it. All we know of is this trailer, and it's clearly anti-Islamic. And the way everyone has started to, it appears to be, it was, I think, intentionally provocative, and it clearly did provoke. And now we have the death of four Americans in Libya. So we see the way the Romney campaign responded. And I agree with Borzu that so far it seems to reflect on President Obama. But the concern to me really is you have Karl Rove with a war chest of about $1 billion. Mm-hmm. He can create his own narrative with ads, and they will go to the battleground states. And who knows what events will unfold? I certainly don't. But you can see the potential for creating a kind of counter-narrative that will become a big issue in these last 2 months of the election.
Well, and I have to say, Craig, this is what really struck me about your book is, you know, we've done shows about Karl Rove, but I have to admit, I really didn't realize the extent of his power and just how powerful he is within the Republican Party and how he can make or break people. And so let's talk a little bit overall about the really important question you ask, because you write, whatever the outcome of the elections, Karl Rove has come a long way. Just a few years earlier, as a brand in politics, his name had been toxic. He had been the brains behind one of the most discredited presidents in U.S. history, who had started two horribly costly wars and, having inherited a booming economy, left the nation near economic collapse. And the very important question you ask is, how, after leaving the Bush administration in disgrace, did Karl Rove rise again? And what does it mean that he's back in power? So, I mean, this is kind of a big question, but do you think people realize how much power Karl Rove really has?
No, I don't think they do. And I think, you know, he's a political operative. One question I tried to answer is, well, how does he operate? What does he really do? It's not, you know, how did he get power? And one of the key events from his resurrection was the Citizens United decision of the United States Supreme Court in 2010. And that pretty much opened the floodgates. And when you combined it with the fact that the Republican Party was in tatters under Michael Steele, Rove had a luncheon at his house in Washington, D.C., and he had about two dozen power brokers there, and he emerged with tens of millions of dollars for the midterms. This was a dry run for the presidential election. Now he has about $1 billion that he controls, and he operates outside the Republican Party. He is responsible to no one, so he has a lot of latitude in what he can do.
And how is one person, how was one person able to gain so much power?
Well, you, earlier you said it reads a little like a spy novel, and in fact, I interviewed a former CIA agent named Larry Johnson. He said, you know, my friends at Langley and the CIA could learn a lot from Karl Rove. And he creates fronts within fronts within fronts. He always has deniability. If you look at these, what are essentially disinformation operations that seem to happen in almost every election in which Karl Rove plays a major role, there's almost always deniability. It's hard to really trace it to Karl Rove bit by bit. And I spent a lot of my time talking to former operatives of Karl Rove. Again, these are people, and when you, Karl Rove says, I've never heard of them, and they were not on his payroll. They were paid, he made sure they got paid by, say, the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and in return for lucrative contracts, they would do dirty tricks for him or operations, or they'd take photos, undercover photos of his opponents and so forth. You would have push-pull operations in which political action committees, again, these were technically not tied to Karl Rove, but when you dug deeper, you would see the money came from his donors, and they asked questions in a way that appeared to be like a regular poll, but in fact, they're spreading really slimy rumors about his opponents.
And you say that he also was, I mean, what's amazing also is that he wanted Romney to be the candidate, which I did not realize that. You say that he was not fond of Sarah Palin, and he did all he could to get all of the other Republican nominees out of the race. You write, the Wall Street insiders knew that Rove secretly and quietly supported former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. Can you talk a little bit about why he supported Mitt Romney?
Right. Well, Romney is not the ideal candidate, but I think he was the strongest candidate in the weak field for Rove. He was the closest to being a moderate. Rove has always been at odds with the Tea Party. They don't like him because he represents the free-spending Bush era, which seemed to violate basic conservative principles. Rove is also... he's about winning. He's about being highly disciplined. One thing he did with George W. Bush is George W. Bush was disciplined. He was on message all the time. And the Tea Party's candidates sometimes have candidates like, you may recall, Christine O'Donnell, who was a Tea Party senatorial candidate from Delaware in 2010. And she started talking about having dabbled in witchcraft, and she put on political commercials about that. Well, Karl Rove would have none of that. Similarly, more recently, Todd Akin, the Tea Party senatorial candidate from Missouri, who had gotten a lot of support from Rove, started talking about legitimate rape and how women couldn't give birth if they'd been legitimately raped. Well, that violates the cardinal rule for Rove, and he's tried everything he can to pull the rug out from under Akin.
Well, and I'd love, we're going to break soon, but I'd love to talk with you after the break about the sort of split within the party and why is it that he's not fond of people like Akin and Sarah Palin, and you know, what is his ultimate goal here? And then the other thing that's so fascinating in this book is when you talk about how he got his start in Texas, and what really worked for him was bringing in big money because he wanted to, quote, go after tort reform. And this I had also never read. So really interesting stuff here, Craig. And we're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we will again talk about Karl Rove, the most powerful unelected official in the United States. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be back after this.
And you are listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco. I'm Matt Martin, general manager of the station, joining Rose here in Studio B, asking for your support for KALW. We are past halfway in our fall membership campaign. Our last opportunity to ask for your support until May. So if you're someone who tunes in every Friday to hear the Media Roundtable and you love what Rose and her guests have to talk about and what you learn here, how you stay informed and engaged, your support right now would be the time. There will be no asking for support during next week's Media Roundtable. 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. For $120, we will send you Craig Unger's new book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. I'm a news junkie, and I'll tell you, I learned so much from this book. Really eye-opening information. You'll want to get your hands on this to really learn about who's pulling the strings and what goes on behind the scenes. 800-525-9917. $120 will send you this new book. You can also make a secure pledge online, kalw.org.
We do have a challenge in this hour. Alfred Truesdale, a listener in Menlo Park, has said, if 20 KALW listeners will support your call in the station during this hour, he'll give an additional $500 to local public radio. Join Alfred. Be part of making it to this challenge. 800-525-9917. 20 people in this hour listening to this program. If you're one of them, show your support right now.
Thank you, Alfred. 800-525-9917. We need to know how money in politics is spent. We need to know who is calling the shots behind the scenes. That is what we do on a regular basis here. Support that kind of media. 800-525-9917. And support the work of investigative journalists like Craig Unger. We need this station to give people like Craig a voice. You can also go online to kalw.org. $120 will get you the book. And if we can get 20 calls, we'll
Let's
get an extra
this.
$500 from Alfred Truesdale.
Keep this station independent, local, strong, and looking forward. You know, this is one of those weeks with the news that was coming out of Libya and around the Middle East when I think a lot of people were a little extra glued to the radio. And without public radio, without something, a station like KALW that has the global perspective as well as this local conversation that lets you get that in-depth understanding of what's happening, you know, where would you be? Do you want it to be here? Do you appreciate it? Well, then you can make it happen. Be the next person to call 800-525-9917 or kalw.org.
And we have a couple lines open at 800-525-9917. $120 will send you this excellent new book by Craig Unger called Boss Rove. You can also go online to kalw.org.
Thanks very much. Now we're going to head back to the program.
Thanks for your support. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar, and today we are joined by investigative journalist Craig Unger. He is out with a new book called Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. And Craig calls Karl Rove the most powerful unelected official in the United States. And we know that you really enjoy hearing about these kinds of shows because, unfortunately, we're not hearing that much about Karl Rove in the national media. He's got a huge platform on Fox. He has a regular column in the Wall Street Journal. But it's really important to go back in history and find out how he got his power, where is he getting his money, and what is his ultimate goal. So if you have any questions about Karl Rove and Craig's investigative work, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org, or better yet, you can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org so others can see it. And also, if there was a story that you saw this week that you think deserves more attention, we'd love to hear from you. And let's go to Edward in San Francisco. Hi, Edward.
Good morning. My question is very short. I'm not sure it's simple. Is Karl Rove going to end up being Mitt Romney's brain?
Well, I think the answer is he has a very different relationship with Romney than he did with George W. Bush. And if Romney were to be elected, I don't think he would actually be in the White House. He was very, very close. He was to Bush. He was sort of Bush's alter ego, Bush's brain, as you put it. And as that was the title, of course, of a very good book on the subject. But with Romney, he operates more by remote control. And if you look at the Romney camp, I think a lot of people don't know the names of the various strategists, but perhaps the most famous is Ed Gillespie, who co-founded American Crossroads, a super PAC, with Karl Rove, and now he is Romney's top strategist. Likewise, a woman named Beth Myers is a longtime Rove protege who might end up being Romney's chief of staff.
You have Stuart Stevens, who runs Romney's media operation. There's a guy named Carl Forte, who's sometimes known as Carl Rove's Carl Rove, and he is political director of American Crossroads. He's also head of Romney's super PAC. And remember, there's not supposed to be any coordination between these super PACs and the Romney camp, but it's hard to believe that that does not take place. If Carl Forte doesn't talk to himself, I don't know who does.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Edward. And let's hear next from Roger. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you, Rose. I just returned from the East Coast, and my total family is conservative, so you can imagine the discomfort I was in back there. They watch Fox. It's almost like an addictive thing with them. But back to Carl Rove. He has learned a very old tactic, and I'm sorry I'm going to make an equation here that people won't like, but it really, if you think about it, it works. The Nazis did the same thing. Hitler didn't do it by himself. Goebbels, Goering, they did not do it by themselves. They learned how to key into what was into the German character. And they gave them an excuse. Oh, it wasn't just the Jews, it was gypsies, it was homosexuals. Modern Republican Party, the Tea Party, has learned in that same method of keying into this deep set of anger and hatred towards certain people. They equate the Democrats with being very sympathetic to homosexuals. I could go down the list, but I don't want to take time away from your guest.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Roger. Craig, what are your thoughts on Roger's comments?
Well, Rove's relationship to Fox News is really, really important. And Fox News was started by Roger Ailes. I mean, it's owned by Rupert Murdoch, of course. But back in the Nixon administration, Roger Ailes was a key strategist in the Nixon administration, a media strategist. And at the time, he had a proposal called GOP TV. And effectively, he's done it with Fox News. And at a certain point on Fox during the primaries, as the primaries were about to get underway, as many as five Fox talking heads were actually Republican presidential candidates. plus, there was Karl Rove, who is sort of the party boss on Fox's payroll. And you could see the themes that the guest was talking about played out on Fox, and it becomes a hugely important propaganda organ for them.
Well, and the other thing is you point out that when commercials are run with super PAC money, you see these commercials not only air, but repeated on Fox over and over again. So Karl Rove is not only obviously buying the ads, but he's getting free airtime because of the slot he has on Fox News.
Absolutely. They'll be played again and again, discussed at length, and they'll talk about how brilliant they are without realizing the conflict of interest here, without explaining the conflict of interest.
I also want to talk a little bit about where the issues that matter to Karl Rove the most, because as you say, he was not a fan of Sarah Palin. He's not a fan of people like Todd Akin, for example, not a fan of Rick Santorum. Can you talk about what issues this man cares about most?
Well, he cares about winning. He is not an ideologue. To me, it's really power, power, power. And I talked to Roger Stone, who's a well-known Republican strategist, and he said, look, Carl isn't a real conservative. It's crony capitalism. It means if he can get money from a big donor, he'll do favorites for him. So you saw this very early on in Rove's career back in the 1980s. The Republican Party in Texas was really sort of weak. Rove was sort of a nobody. There were powerful conservative Democrats in Texas like Lloyd Benson and John Conley. So big business didn't see any reason to give to the Democrats. And here's where you see Rove's brilliance to get around all that. He started going to big tobacco, to big pharmaceutical companies, and he said, look, you guys face many billions of dollars in damage in product liability lawsuits.
I can save you a lot of that money. If you contribute a few million to my candidates, I will help elect a conservative to the Texas State Supreme Court, the Texas State Legislature. I'll put George W. Bush in the gubernatorial seat, and we will limit the damages for you. And that's what he did. And that's sort of it gives you a good sense of how he operates and is a precursor to the super PACs today.
Well, and this is really important because you quote Craig McDonald of Texans for Public Justice in your book, and he said, Rove was smart enough to understand that tort reform was a cash cow and a rising divisive issue between Republicans and Democrats, so he put a wedge between the trial lawyers and the business community. And you report that in the 80s, the Democratic-dominated Texas Supreme Court had become known as a plaintiff's court, siding with the little guy almost all the time against the big corporations. How quickly we forget about this, right? It wasn't that long ago. And you report that Rove was determined to change that. So he wanted to raise money from these high-rolling business communities, which the Republicans at that point had not done, and his new key issue was tort reform.
Right. There was a very good documentary on the subject called Hot Coffee, Roe was so successful it even became an episode on Seinfeld, the sitcom, and people started joking about these exorbitant verdicts, and in fact there were a few, but you know what, I don't think there was a real popular uprising as Rove made it appear. It's more that he was able to funnel millions and millions of dollars into these political action committees. These were really sort of astroturf, phony grassroots uprisings. And they resulted in millions of commercials on TV.
Well, and more importantly, they resulted in a complete flip of the Texas Supreme Court, because you report that in the 80s, they had 9 Democratic judges, no Republicans. But over time, Rove remade it and turned it into a pro-business court consisting of 9 Republican judges and no Democrats.
Exactly. And Rove understood that, he'd been around during Watergate. He watched Nixon go down during Watergate, and he thought you could get around that kind of thing if you took over the courts. And he took over the courts in Texas. He did it in Alabama. Very few people realize he had his base in Alabama was almost as powerful as his base in Texas. And once Bush became president, he kept a very clear eye on the courts and was a key figure in the U.S. attorney scandal and in directing U.S. attorneys to go after key issues that have played a big, big role in gaming the entire electoral system.
What would you say to people who are thinking, oh, come on, Craig, there's no way one guy could have single-handedly changed the makeup of the Texas Supreme Court?
Well, you know, I did a lot of reporting on this, and it's interesting. I mean, you can go back to I did talk to the head of the Texas Republican Party who told me those stories, and he was sort of upset because Rove established an independent base for himself outside the party. That is, Rove raised so much money that he got to choose the candidate for the Republican ticket. The party structure was left out of the equation. He also went at it again as soon as Bush became became president. And he started what is now, the Democrats call it a voter suppression campaign. He instructed the U.S. attorneys to go after voter fraud cases. And one U.S. attorney, David Iglesias from New Mexico, spent months investigating and said, well, gee, voter fraud doesn't really exist. There's nothing for me to prosecute. And as a result, he lost his job. But now these voter suppression drives are alive in roughly 30 states. The courts are challenging them in some states. This is a drive to require government-issued IDs, and it can disenfranchise as many as 20 million eligible voters.
We're speaking with Craig Unger about his new book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. And Craig asks an important question in this book: how, after leaving the Bush administration in disgrace, did Karl Rove rise again? And what does it mean that he is back in power? And another important question is, how are the media covering Karl Rove and the money that he's raising? And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions for Craig Unger about the investigation he did into Karl Rove, and what are your thoughts about what you're seeing in the media in terms of money and politics and who's really calling the shots. What questions do you think the media should be asking? And what are you learning from the stories that you're reading about money and politics? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And if there's a story you saw this week that you'd like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Craig, what can you tell us about the sort of unholy alliance between Karl Rove, the Koch brothers, and Sheldon Adelson? They're funneling so much money into the Romney campaign.
Right. Well, as I said earlier, Rove is not a favorite of the Tea Party, and he does not particularly like the Tea Party. They regard him as the old Republican establishment, an emblem of the free spending Bush era that violated basic conservative principles. But
why doesn't he like them?
Well, I think he likes the money
right.
that the Koch brothers have and Sheldon Adelson. Adelson says he's going to put in as much as $100 million in this campaign. The Koch brothers, as much as $400 million. Plus, there is undeniably a certain kind of dynamism and energy in the Tea Party, and he wants to harness that without alienating him, without alienating them. But there are basic fundamental disagreements he has with them.
So is it fair to say that he's not a fan of the sort of evangelical movement, but he wants the people on the ground and the energy that's behind it?
Well, likewise with the evangelicals. He personally is not really a serious Christian evangelical, but during the Bush era, he was terrifically effective at harnessing as many as 80 million adult evangelicals and making them into a conservative movement. Similarly, the Tea Party is more the fiscal conservative side of that movement. It promotes, there's a big overlap, but the face you see has more to do with fiscal conservatism. And he was, if you look at the Bush administration, he was the architect of that. It was not very disciplined in terms of fiscal conservatism. But he tries to brush that aside and forge an alliance really for the sake of expediency.
Well, we've got a couple of more callers who have questions about Karl Rove. So let's hear from Arthur in San Francisco. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Excellent program. My question is very simple. How, it sounds like he's kind of like Karl Rove is like this rabid dog, controlling, dominating. How do you put him down? I don't have millions of dollars. How do we stop this? How do we stop people like Karl Rove? Even on the Democratic side, how do we stop, corporations and people like this from dominating the political spectrum and stop this, without the courts and outside the courts, maybe?
Yeah.
How do we stop this? I'll take my answer off the air.
Good question. Thank you, Arthur. Craig, how do we stop this?
Well, I don't think there's an easy answer. I think it's being attentive. And for example, if you go back to 2004, one of Rove's most effective ploys was the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Now, Rove has said again and again that he had nothing to do with it. And if you recall, they were the so-called independent group that began attacking John Kerry as a coward, as a liar about his military record and so forth. A lot of their claims were later disproven, and it wasn't until much later that people began to look at who put the money up behind it, and in fact, they were several donors of Karl Rove's, and it looked like he did play a major role. Well, in this election, I think people have to look at that kind of thing and respond much, much more quickly. I've been looking at, there's a group called Special Operations OPSEC. So far, they've been kind of ineffective. But I think there's a chance they're going to be Swift Boat 2.0. And they started out in August attacking Obama at his strong point. This is a typical Rove tactic, just as John Kerry was attacked for being a war hero. They started attacking him for killing Osama bin Laden and saying in doing so he leaked crucial national security information. And with the events in Libya and so forth, I'm keeping an eye on that kind of thing, trying to see if that is the kind of Rovian narrative that will be spun out to attack Obama.
Because you do detail so many dirty tricks in your book. It's actually kind of eye-opening. And he'll even go after his own if he needs to.
Oh, absolutely. He, I mean, especially if you go back to the 2000 Republican primaries, you had George W. Bush faced a real threat from John McCain, and suddenly in the South Carolina primary, McCain, you know, again, this is attacking someone at their strength. McCain had and his wife had adopted a Bangladeshi daughter, and for that presumably reasonably virtuous deed, Rove's people started attacking McCain and spreading rumors that McCain had fathered an illegitimate child with an African-American prostitute.
We're speaking with Craig Unger, and, you know, Arthur asks, how do we stop this? Well, in order to stop it, you have to know that it's going on in the first place, right? So what are your thoughts about what we're seeing in the media right now about Karl Rove and his influence?
Well, I've always been kind of upset about the Washington Press Corps and how they cover him or don't cover him. One of the great diseases of Washington journalism is what I call access journalism. And that is, if Karl Rove is your source, that is money in the bank. You can make a good living and break stories again and again. And because of that, a lot of reporters don't want to cross him. If you go back to the White House correspondents' dinner during the Bush administration, you may recall there was a very funny episode where Rove was dancing and doing hip-hop and rap dancing with members of the Washington Press Corps, including David Gregory of NBC News. And if you're dancing with Karl Rove, you're not asking the tough questions, is what I would say.
Yeah, I remember that. That was awful. Have you met Karl Rove?
I did. I've had two run-ins with him, and I tried to get a sit-down interview with him as a reporter for Vanity Fair, and he kept putting me off. Finally, I flew to Ohio, and I saw him at a speaking engagement, and I introduced myself as a reporter. I started asking him about smart tech, which is a technology operation that he has used again and again, and you know, frankly, has been involved in a lot of dubious shenanigans during the last 10 years. He told me he's never heard of it. And I'm not sure I believe him because his own emails were hosted there.
Well, let's try to take one or two more calls before we have to end. Let's hear from Chris in Oakland. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I guess I'm in the form of a question, I'm looking for confirmation on a couple of points. One, is it that reporters at some of the corporate media take the bait? That is, they cover what Karl Rove is asking them to cover. You know, why are we even entertaining these ideas that are relatively meaningless? And then I believe it's also the case that, especially this year, Mitt Romney is not a candidate who the powers behind him think can win. It's just, they got to have a viable candidate, and they'll use the election to try to advance their, if you want to call them philosophical or ideological perspective, so that they keep that ball rolling, and they're looking ahead. You know, they're looking to 2014, they're looking to 2016. Would your guests agree with that analysis?
All right, well, thank you. What are your thoughts, Craig? We have about 2 minutes.
Right. Well, I think Romney's clearly a flawed candidate, whether he wins or not, I think if he implodes, and he's had a very bad week already, I can see Rove switching a lot of his attention to the Senate races and trying to ensure that the Republicans retake the Senate. I think they still think he has a chance of winning, and we'll have to see it play out, but he'll almost have to sweep those battleground states as things stand now. The other question is just that, I think there is this unspoken alliance between reporters and powerful sources like Karl Rove. Bob Novak, in his memoirs, was quite explicit about it, and it was an unexpected moment of candor in which he said, look, Karl Rove was my AAA source for about 30 years, and he was my meal ticket, and in return for that, you don't attack your sources. Hmm. You never write anything critical about him. Hmm. And that's the way things work in Washington.
And, Craig, are you getting many reviews by D.C. reporters? Are you getting many phone calls to talk about your book?
You know, not as much as I'd like. It was interesting. I had My second run-in with Rove was at the Republican convention. There was a breakfast at which he spoke, and I rose and asked some questions. And Rove started attacking me. He said that here goes Unger launching his book. Watch him launch away. It's an entertaining piece of fiction. And he said wrongly that I accused him of murder, which I don't do in the book. But what was interesting is afterwards, seven or eight reporters came up to me, and there were maybe 75 reporters there. But every single one who came up to me to want to interview me about what was really going on in my book was a foreigner. And it meant they were not locked in to the world of Washington journalism, of the access journalism we've been talking about.
Well, that speaks volumes about where we are right now with the media. Craig, we'd love to have you back because we didn't even get to talk about the Valerie Plame Wilson scandal. Thank you so much for joining us. Craig Unger, thank you, is author of Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. This is Your Call. Thanks for listening. And thank you for listening. What a great interview. Craig Unger, he deserves so much more of a platform. But as he said, the majority of the reporters who approached him at the convention were from other countries, not from the United States. That is why a show like Your Call is so important, because we do give people like Craig Unger a voice to bring out this important information. And you can support that by calling 800-525-9917 for a $120 contribution. We'll send you Boss Rove by Craig Unger. And Matt, what's our update?
That's right. I just came back from the phone room. My apologies for being
okay.
A little late. We have 11 calls and clicks at this point. 11 people have said,
great,
I'm going to renew my membership or become a member. We actually had somebody go online at KALW.org, a listener in Anchorage, Alaska, who said that she thinks that KALW is independent radio we can believe in. And she said, your call is so very much appreciated. Well, thank you for that support. Be the next person to get involved wherever you listen. We know there's a lot of people who listen online. If you're one of them, understand this radio station makes this program possible. Listener support makes everything here possible. Your Call in particular is a grassroots production. Show your support now.
We need 9 calls to make our goal from Alfred Truesdale. 20 listeners will get an extra $500. We can do this. 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org. We need a space where we can ask the hard questions and bring out this information. Matt, you missed this, but Craig said at the convention he got more response from international reporters than U.S. reporters.
It's one of the reasons on this show we bring on the mainstream, we bring on the alternative, we bring on the international reporters, because that dialogue is so important.
Yes, and so support that kind of radio. We need this kind of radio to really go behind the headlines and find out what is happening behind the scenes. 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org.
Thanks to Mary Sanders in Richmond and James Cummings here in the city. Just two of the people who have called or clicked in this hour to support your call and KALW. And thanks to Alfred Truesdale, who has put forward this $500 challenge to other listeners. 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. And a click is as good as a call at KALW.org.
And we have one line open. I see the phones are ringing. Thank you for your support. 800-525-9917. $120 will send you the book. Maybe you can afford more. We have had pledges from $20 to $10,000.
$5,000. We had a $5,000
yes.
contribution. Yes.
At 800-525-9917 or online KALW.org. It's a collective effort. We could not do this without all of you. And 100% of our show is funded by you. 800-525-9917.
These challenges that we do aren't about a dollar number. They're about a number of people taking part. Because each of these listeners who challenges everyone else in this community says, hey, each of us can do our part. Here's what I can do. Join me. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. We have surpassed the halfway point in our membership drive. We are going to wrap it up next week. This time next week, we will not be asking for your support, and we will do no more drives until next May. So if you've been waiting, if you're a Media Roundtable fan, now's the time to show your support.
800-525-9917 or online, kalw.org. A $120 contribution will send you Craig Unger's new book, Boss Rove. We've got great shows coming up for you next week. David K. Johnston is out with a new book. We're going to talk about a new biography about Howard Zinn. Support that kind of radio. 800-525-9917. $120 will send you Craig Unger's new book, chock full of very important information. information as we head into this election are online at KALW.org.
And when you call or when you click, make your contribution, choose a thank you gift if you would like. But most importantly, let us know what you think. What's important to you? Because we're 77% listener-supported here at KALW. That keeps us connected to your concerns and responsive to you. We do this together. We really produce this radio station in collaboration with the community. It feels great to us, and we thank you so much for everyone who's on the line right now at 800-525-9917.
And the lines are getting full. Thank you so much. 800-525-9917. You can also go online, make a secure pledge, KALW.org.
A line is open at 800-525-9917. I see that Bud does not have a phone in his hand. Let's fill those lines. Keep independent local radio strong.
Thank you, Bud, and thank you so much for your support at 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
You're listening to KALW San Francisco. We thank you for your